All persons having any business before this honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii, draw nigh. Give your attention, you shall be heard.
Please call the case.
Case number SCWC 14-426, Bank of New York Mellon v. Marquez et al. Arguing for Petitioner Ferreras, Richard Naivieja Werderman. Arguing for Respondent R. Onaga, Inc., Lloyd Y. Asato. Argument on the merits.
Well, good morning, everyone. And before I begin, we begin our proceeding today, with a heavy heart, share with you the news that the Honorable James S. Burns, who served Hawaii with great distinction on the bench for more than 30 years, passed away this morning. Judge Burns made immeasurable contributions to the judiciary, to our community, and to countless people who he mentored and was a friend to, including myself. So our heartfelt sympathy goes out to his wife, Emmy, and his family. But Judge Burns, you know, was somebody who always believed in professionalism and being there and doing your job, even when the circumstances were tough. So let's get started with our argument today. And, Counselor, are you both ready to proceed?
Yes.
All right. So my understanding, Mr. Werderman, you've reserved 10 minutes for rebuttal. And, Mr. Asato, you'd like a warning with 10 minutes to go in your argument, correct?
That's right.
Very well. All right, Mr. Werderman, if you'd take it away, please.
May it please the court, Mr. Chief Justice and Justices of the court. We are, this is a case about bona fide good faith purchasers at a commissioner sale for value who bought the parcel that they've lived in now for 2.5 years, that they've made substantial improvements to. This has been their home for the last 2.5 years. And as the court is aware, what happened is this was really a dispute between two creditors that were fighting over a priority. And the non-prevailing creditor, Onaga, of course, took an appeal. And what Onaga also did was filed for a stay without the need to post a superseded spot. And the court in February of 2014, Circuit Court, denied that motion, required Onaga to file a supersedious bond, and Onaga never did. And what happened is the commissioner, the findings of fact, conclusions of law, the order confirming sale that good value was paid for the home was all filed in the land court. And concurrent with that filing, a certificate of title was issued by the assistant registrar, and indicating that the Ferraras were the fee simple owners of the property, subject to some encumbrances that aren't pertinent at all to Onaga's claims.
So it was a deed that was filed, is that correct?
Commissioner deed was filed, yes.
Okay, and what's your response to the suggestion that it should have been the judgment that should have been filed?
A judgment isn't required. If you look at, it certainly could have been filed, but it wasn't. I don't know why the commissioner didn't. But, you know, realistically, I mean, these are just a couple bought a home who, in reality, I mean, they're certainly relying on the commissioner to file whatever documents are needed. And the assistant registrar is not operating like they may in the Bureau of Conveyance. They know exactly what's required to issue a certificate of title, because under Chapter 501, of course, the TORN system, essentially what the state is doing is certifying the title in a property through that issuance of the certificate of title. If we look at HRS, and in more direct response to your question, Your Honor, in HRS 501-155, it says that any judgment of a court of competent jurisdiction, whether federal or court of the state of Hawaii, affecting title or rights, may be recorded. It then says in a second instance, every instrument necessary to give effect by the judgment and directed by the court to be executed, whether executed by a party or by some other person appointed by the court, shall be recorded and shall have full force and effect to bind the land to be affected thereby. So that's what was done here. The deed was filed, the documents, and that in and of itself.
Well, this says that statute you're reading references a judgment, doesn't it?
Well, that's what it says, but again, it's may be recorded is the operative language in the first sentence.
So your argument is maybe this statute doesn't specifically apply, but I mean, it could have been done in this way, but the certificate of title can be issued in other ways as well.
Yes, I mean, the fact that the judgment wasn't filed wasn't determinative of the issuance of the certificate of title. The deed in and of itself, again, is something that affected the title. Of course, it was the conveyance that was filed along with the other, the confirmation, the finding the fact, conclusion of the law, those are all filed. And that, under 501-155, bounded the land.
Could you also address the effect of 501-118, which is, in case of foreclosure of by action, a certified copy of the final judgment of the court confirming the sale may be filed or recorded with the assistant registrar or the deputy after the time for appealing therefrom has expired, and the purchaser shall thereupon be entitled to entry of a new certificate. So how does the phrase after the time for appealing therefrom has expired apply in this case? Is that after the appeal is concluded? And if so, was the issuance of the certificate premature?
No. The issuance of the certificate, all of the required documents, as I just stated under 501-155, were submitted. If we look at that provision that Your Honor is referring to, again, a certified copy may be filed at the conclusion of the appeal, and if it is filed, then a new certificate shall then be issued.
But that process can be accelerated by the filing of a deed. So I'm trying to understand what's your interpretation of after the time for appealing therefrom has expired? It appears to indicate an intent to have the appellate process have played out. And what's your response or assessment of that language?
Well, in this,
or whether you even agree with that assessment?
Well, I think if we look at it, and this is language that was included in the 1903 statute, right after the Organic Act was filed. And at that time, of course, there was this move by the new government to clean up title, and you know, they adopted the TORN system to do that.
Why doesn't it mean exactly what it says? What it says is, it doesn't say after the time for appeal is concluded, after the appeal is concluded. It says after the time for appealing therefrom has expired. In other words, it sounds to me the ICA gave it a ruling that doesn't coincide with what the words are. After the time for appealing still means the same thing in 1903 as it does right now. The 30 days. In other words, it looks like what perhaps was being contemplated in 1903, arguably, is that if it went through a court action, if there's a court action, that means there's parties involved in all likelihood. So let's give the losing side 30 days to, or whatever that time period is, to move for a stay or move for a stay of execution or get a bond. And if it's not done, that's it. It just, and the difference between this and the foreclosure sale is, with a foreclosure sale, there hasn't been a court action, and it's unlikely anybody can appeal that other process. So I'm not sure we have to give a strained interpretation because it's 1903.
Yeah. I thank you. I certainly agree with that. And the 30 days certainly did pass. It was actually several months before the certificate of title was actually issued. And the Onagas had every opportunity to comply with HRCP 62D and the court's order in posting a supersedious bond, and they did. And so under 501-155, all of those documents are filed, and the assistant registrar properly issued the new certificate of title. And the case law is substantial throughout the, not only Hawaii, but through the country, that and it's also certainly talked about in the Lathrop case and by the ICA and the Citibank v. Sage Ventures case, that if you don't file that supersedious bond and the transaction goes through and is finalized, it's moot. It's done. And they had every opportunity to do that again. There's inexcusable as to why, and in the Lathrop case, the court even discussed that that was the remedy open to the appellant in that case. And in that case, like in this one, it didn't execute that remedy that they had.
It seems as if what the say supersedious bond, it allows parties to gamble. And if you want to gamble and not get a bond and you lose, in this case it was a 2 weeks late or something, that's kind of like an informed, this is not a case, it seems, as this is a case where a motion was filed, so it's not somebody who wasn't aware.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Excuse me, it just doesn't, this is not a situation where the party knew that if it didn't receive a bond, that the certificate of title couldn't issue. I mean, they made a motion, and the judge told them what to do.
Yes.
Well, Mr. Werdeman, what would that bond have looked like? I mean, I think the point that is being made by Onagan in this case is that essentially there wasn't a real judgment. It was just a determination on the foreclosure. So what would the bond have looked like?
There certainly was, we would submit a judgment, and the orders confirming the sale also ordered the commissioner to provide the documents to the Ferraras that were required, and that included the filing of the deed and the presenting of that filed deed to the Ferraras. As far as the superseded bond, I would assume that it would be for the purchase price of the house. I mean, that's what my guess would be.
At one time, the amount involved here, I mean, I'm a little bit confused, and I can ask other counsel, but initially it seemed that the debt was $75,000, far less than, and that would have required a bond, much more than the bond, although there's some representation that that amount had grown almost to the price of the house, I guess I'll have to ask. But I think that would be a consideration in obtaining a bond by a party.
Well, first of all, I mean, whether that's a consideration or not, that it wasn't pursued any further by Onaga. Apparently, they didn't even make an attempt to determine what exactly that bond, that value would be from the court, nor did they attempt to, from the record, post a bond for the $75,000 amount or for any amount, for that matter. And as Your Honor had stated earlier, they're well aware of, they applied for it, the court denied it. The ICA said that the court was correct in denying it, but what the ICA confusingly didn't do was to talk about how that failure to post the bond affected the outcome of the case. And based on all the case law that we cited in Citibank and Lothrop and the Ames case, all of those cases, it's clear that if you don't file that supersedeas bond and the transaction is finalized, but it's done. Title has already passed. And if the appellant chooses not to affect that remedial measure that it has to stay the proceedings, like the Supreme Court talked about in Lathrop, then it's at their peril. They do have that option, though. And what I would also say is that the ICA, in an interpretation like this, I mean, what we're really doing is we're opening up the entire judicial sales process to all kind of uncertainty, to all kind of appeals that may be taken without. ICA thought that language in 501-118 was some sort of automatic stay once you file an appeal. And I respectfully disagree with that interpretation. The 30 days, as we talked about, the 30-day period did pass. They had that opportunity to file the bond, and they didn't. And as was talked about in Citibank, you know, there has to be stability and productiveness of the judicial sales process. And that's the policy behind that's really at jeopardy here. And also, of course, the bona fide good faith purchasers who paid all of this money for this house in good faith and have been living there, you know, they're the ones that are putting it, are the victims in all of this with the reading that the ICA gave.
Then, Mr. Werdman, I just want to be clear about your position. And your view, had a supersedeas bond been filed under 62A at the time a notice of appeal was filed, then in your view, it would have been premature to issue a new certificate of title until the appeal was finished?
It would have stayed the process, yes.
As a matter of just procedure, does someone physically take down that bond to the land court, or how is it done?
My understanding is that the commissioner who is appointed by the court takes that down to land court and has it filed. The assistant registrar reviews all the documents, make sure that everything's in order. Because of this certification process that the state engages in land court, they have to make sure that all the documents are in proper order, and they then file all of that and issue the certificate of title. There is no, if there was an order saying it stayed pending an appeal, as your Honor had asked about, that certainly would have changed everything that was before this court on.
Well, anything further at this time, Mr. Werdman, or anything from the other members of the court? Why don't we hear from Mr. Asato, and then you can reserve the rest of your time for rebuttal. Mr. Asato.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. A little background, not put in by petitioners. The underlying case is a foreclosure by action, which is a judicial foreclosure mortgage pursuant to HRS 667-1.5 and 667-3. After the foreclosure has ended,
If you could speak into the mic, just to, so we can be sure to hear. That'll help us.
And after the foreclosure has ended or whatever decision has been made, either party has a right to appeal pursuant to HRS 641-1, and recently by the added provision in chapter 667, which is 667-51, any party that has an adverse decision from the circuit court in a foreclosure action may appeal the decree of foreclosure and any judgment on any order thereafter, confirming sale, etc. Also, for background purposes, the property foreclosed in the underlying circuit court action was land registered in land court. In this court's decision in Mortgage Electronic Registration Services versus Wise, 130 Hawaii 11, a 2013 case, the court explained that a foreclosure by action is bifurcated. And if a decision on the decree of foreclosure, which is on the merits, is the first appeal. The second appeal would be any action on that action of decree of foreclosure. In our case, respondent appellant Aronaga
can you explain to me what relief a court could possibly give you at this point?
Oh, I'm sorry.
What relief could you possibly be obtaining from this court?
Oh, I'm sorry.
In other words, if you were to prevail on appeal, if you win on appeal, what is it that this court can afford you? The property is already, by through land court, is already with a bona fide purchaser. What can this court give you if you were to win your appeal?
Your Honor, the first appeal that Aronaga did was in CAAP-13-002-2287, and that was on the decree of foreclosure. The second appeal was CAAP-14-00426, which is this appeal and before the court. In the first appeal, Your Honor, it went to judgment, final judgment. But prior to the final judgment, petitioners also filed a motion to intervene, a motion to dismiss the appeal, which were denied. According to Wise, Merz versus Wise case, it's res judicata. They raised the same issue they're raising in this appeal today, Your Honor. That they wanted to intervene.
What, if you could answer Justice Possible, what do you want us to do? Do you want us to take the property back and deed it to your client? Do you want us to undo all the transactions, send it back? Please let me finish. I'm sorry. Send it back to circuit court? What exactly are you asking this court to do?
To dismiss the petition, the application, Your Honor.
Mr. Asato,
yes.
The ICA didn't ever specifically set aside or void the certificate of title. So inasmuch as the certificate of title still stands, what even if we grant or dismiss this petition, what relief could you get when the Ferraris still have the certificate?
Well, for background purposes, Your Honor, land court, the land court decrees, registration. And in this case, it decreed registration for the mortgagor whose property was foreclosed. There's provisions in the land court, land court statute that says that an amendment to the original registration decree must be by an order of a court. And it just must be by order of court. Rules promulgated by this court, Rule 59C of the land court, states that any foreclosure by action to have an entry of a new certificate, you have to file an order of the court which amends the original filed certificate that the mortgagee no longer owns it. And the court is saying, by this certified decree of the circuit court confirming the sale, that order now amends that original order that's filed in land court. In this case, Your Honor, petitioners are filing a hearsay document, commissioner's deed, a prohibited document, prohibited by the rules of this court in Rule 60 of the land court. Anytime you need an entry of a certificate, it has to be by an order of a court. And the underlying principle is that to order to vacate or to amend a court order, you should have a court order. And the actions of the land court are by court orders.
Mr. Asato, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. If you finish your answer, and then I had a question. I had a question, but are you done with your answer?
Yeah.
Okay. What's your response to the suggestion that Onaga had the opportunity to file a supersedious bond, and by not doing so, it cannot at this point is not in a position to set aside these transactions?
Okay.
Because
in looking at that authority that petitioners gave, the Citibank case, Citibank versus SAJE Ventures, etc. The appellants in that case admitted to the summary judgment, in effect, admitted to the decree of foreclosure being entered into. The appellants then decided to appeal the order that confirmed the sale. Although the order to confirm the sale was entered, they wanted to appeal that. And the court said, well, in order to appeal it, you have to stay it, because the court order just keeps on going until it's valid and effective. If there's no intermediate termination or withdrawal, it's a court order. So in effect, the decree of foreclosure was entered into, admittedly, by the parties. The order of confirmation was entered into. Now appellate is saying, we want to reconsider what we did. We want to reconsider what happened at the order. I don't know if the purchase price was not valid, or the court said too late. Unless there's a jurisdictional defect, those court orders are valid. You have no right to appeal. Appeal is terminated. The other cases are the same.
How does this help you failing to file a bond?
Your Honor, we did not file a bond. The bond was $1 million something that the court required, circuit court required. We didn't have that kind of money. So we waived the bond, Your Honor. A relinquishing of our rights is not an illegal conduct whereby petitioners have the right to come to court and remedy it through an application for a writ to say, just because they didn't file a bond, we're right. You know, it's not an illegal conduct that injured them. What injured them is what the rules says, John, and the statute says.
Well, the statute says that the certificate shall be conclusive as to all matters.
Correct. Correct, Your Honor.
And they have a certificate of title.
Correct.
And your argument...
How they got that was submitting to the staff at the land court a deed, and as they admitted, FOF, finding facts and conclusions of the law, and that's it. The statute says, and the staff is just ministerial, Your Honor. Who's after the staff gets us application to re-register or...
Let's assume you're correct. Isn't that a separate cause of action against the state? Why does it allow you to vacate what's already occurred? I mean, there's a certificate of title. If your argument is, hey, it was fraudulently obtained, that's a different action, wouldn't it be?
Not if the initial... You're assuming that they got the certificate by filing a certified copy of the circuit court order confirming sale. They didn't do that. That's why we're saying the certificate issued ministerially by the department is no good. What they should have done was, according to the statute and according to your rules, 59C, in a foreclosure action, you have to file a certificate, a certified copy of the judgment confirming sale to get a new certificate. The way they got the new certificate was their own process. It was not the statutory process or the legal process or rules under this court promulgated to confirm the statutory.
But isn't it that said, all those issues ultimately might be addressed, but the circuit court said to stay the action, you need to file a supersedious bond. So how do you get around the fact that there was no bond filed? And once the 30-day, given the failure of a bond to be filed, how can the court still grant relief?
Well, okay, Your Honor, we said that in a foreclosure action, it was timely filed, okay, within the 30 days.
It being the notice of appeal, or?
Yeah, whatever. It was filed timely, the notice of appeal, in the first decree of foreclosure. I'm assuming that 501.118 says when you file at the expiration of the appeal, it's not the notice time, it's when the appeal is decided.
If that was the case, why did you even file a motion for supersedious bond? You wouldn't need it.
I did, and it was just...
I understand, but why even have it? You would never need a bond. There would be no reason to have bonds. If this statute says what the ICA seemed to indicate and what you're arguing, it means that that until the appeal is completed, you can't get an entry of a new certificate.
Yeah, what I did was...
So that means all our properties would always be tied up until appeals are completed?
What I did was file the... on notice of stay in appellate court to try to stop the second order confirming the sale. And that was denied. But I didn't file any appeal or stay in appellate court thereafter. Anyway, the statute and the rules have the legal process how to get a certificate of title. The statute specifically states it has to be a certified copy of a court order to amend a court order that's you want to amend in land court. The process they did was file a prohibited document, a hearsay document, to get the certificate. Your Honor, the Minister of Staff.
Why is it a hearsay document?
I beg what?
Why is a legal document a hearsay document? Almost by definition, a legal document is not hearsay. So I'm not sure I understand your reference.
Only because it's not certified, Your Honor.
Well, that doesn't make it hearsay.
I was referring it to the action required by statute. You have to have a certified court order. And I'm saying that the commissioner's deed was not certified. And that's why I'm saying that it's hearsay. But
Maybe I could ask you for clarification, Mr. Sato, about the circumstances that the Marqueses found themselves in as bona fide purchasers, because I think that's what Citibank is attempting to address, where you have a so-called innocent third party that makes a purchase, and
correct.
Then when there is going to be a question about the underlying foreclosure, the concept, I guess, is that there's an element of a certainty to an extent that's provided to the third-party purchaser by the posting of the supersedeas bond. There's some protection, at least. So how do you respond to that? Didn't we find that the good-faith purchasers here would be in kind of a precarious situation if there wasn't a supersedeas bond filed and they just have to wait until the end of the appeal before getting a certificate of title? Or am I missing something there?
Okay, well, I think the ICA addressed that issue correctly. The ICA said that in a voluntary situation where the owner, registered owner, wants to mortgage his property, he can go to court, land court, have that approved. In a foreclosure action, it's an involuntary transfer. The registered owner is being foreclosed by court order. So it's a different situation than when it's voluntary. So the ICA said, if it's voluntary, under Section 50182, you have to list everyone that's on the document, everyone that's on the current owner's certificate of title, every encumbrance, because, Your Honor, it's a court order, and it's sitting there, and to get a new certificate, which petitioners did, wiped out everything.
So the Ferraras were in a situation in which they couldn't perfect their title until the end of the appeal, despite the fact that there was no supersedeas bond filed? Is that your view? Trying to get your sense of what the Ferraras' options were. Was there any way for them to be able to perfect this title in this situation, other than to just wait until the appeal was finished, even though a supersedeas bond wasn't filed?
Well, I think that's a plain and unambiguous reading of statute 501118. You have to wait until the appeal is filed, and after that, get that order of the circuit court confirming the sale and get a new entry.
Isn't there public policy contrary to that? Because if people know you're going to have to wait for appeal, you're not going to get the same kind of price when there's a sale. People are going to lay back knowing, hey, it may be 5 or 10 years before I'll ever be able to get this house I'm bidding on. And not only that, it may be vacated by an appellate court. I mean, that would seem to work contrary to the interests of homeowners.
Well, you know, if that was a situation and there was no statute or rules for petitioners to follow, you know, I guess public policy would come in. But the statutes and the rules are very clear. You have to have a certified court order, file it to amend a court order that's already filed. Unless you do that,
Well, what about another possible reading of that statute, 501-118, which says after the time for appealing therefrom has expired? Isn't another way to read that statute that it refers to whatever the appeal period is, or the period for filing the appeal, which would be a 30-day period? Isn't that also a natural reading of that statute? And why would you suggest we shouldn't read it in that manner?
Because as I said, that you know, the bifurcated, the foreclosure, judicial foreclosure process is bifurcated. The first appeal is on the decree itself. The second is on the motion. This is on the second appeal, motion to confirm. The first appeal, the ICA vacated the decree of foreclosure. So there's no instance where now petitioners have the right to come in and file a certified court order, because that court order has been vacated. And that's what I'm saying, that under MERS versus Wise case, didn't appeal the first appeal, is res judicata. The second appeal is of no effect. It should, and the ICA vacated the second appeal.
But that came after the deed had been filed, correct? So the ICA's decision was September of 2014, but it was in August of 2014 that the Ferraras recorded the commissioner's deed and were issued the certificate of title. So why isn't that certificate of title conclusive, or why does the ICA's subsequent action in any way invalidate that certificate of title?
It doesn't. Petitioner certificate of title, Your Honor?
Yes.
It doesn't, because it's void, according to our opinion, because that certificate of title was obtained by a hearsay deed, a deed not certified, and it wasn't a certified court order, which would amend a court order to get a new certificate.
Okay, but you brought that up before the ICA, is that correct?
At the time when
The certificate of title was void.
Correct.
And the ICA did not rule that it was void. And the ICA did not rule that the certificate of title was void.
I know, the ICA vacated their order, though. And how can you have an order that's vacated to get a certificate of title? I see my time is
up. Oh, no, you still have, that's just a warning that the end of your time is coming, but how much more time is available?
Respondent has 7 minutes.
Oh, you still have 7 minutes to go if you have other arguments you'd like to address to the court, Mr. Osato.
The arguments that there's no standing, Your Honor, in this application by petitioners, because in order to have this standing...
Appeal standing?
Okay.
Did you file a cross appeal, a cross application on standing?
Oh, no. I'm just saying that in this application of petitioners, they don't have standing. Their argument is that by Aronaga not filing a stay, that was an illegal action.
They don't have standing to assert their interests as bona fide purchasers. Is that your argument? You said standing. I think that we're trying to understand the standing argument. Are you suggesting the Ferraras don't have standing to protect their interests as what they say are bona fide purchasers?
Correct. I don't know what illegal conduct they're talking about to have this court remedy so that they can have what they're asking.
I think they're, in a nutshell, they're saying that your client should have posted a bond. And what's do you have any final thoughts on that issue
A relinquishing of a bond is not illegal contact. It's just a waiver of a right. And it shouldn't apply to any third party. It's our own risk that we... Based on that, you know, I have no fear.
Thank you.
Very well. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Mr. Werdemann, your rebuttal.
Onaga referenced they and filed and hearsay documents and whatnot in their arguments. You know, what this the situation for the Ferraras is that they're fighting for their home. They're good faith purchasers. They bought that house. They've been living there. This is their home that they bought, paid good value for it. And what Onaga wants, essentially, from this court is to put them out on the street. I mean, that's the real remedy that's being sought. And, you know, clearly, I mean, this the case law is clear on the need, the requirement to file supersedeas bond before that transaction is completed. It wasn't done. And again, you know, the matter is moved.
What's your response to their 59C argument? They referred to Rule 59C, Land Court rules.
I don't fully understand that argument, in all honesty. There was a earlier order that was issued regarding the foreclosure sale that was the subject of another appeal. That doesn't at all change the fact that the transaction had already occurred and this matter is moot, and we would submit that the case law supports that such a finding by this court, that judgment stands because the matter is moot and the appeal should have been dismissed. If there's any clarification that needs to be done down there, should we prevail in these proceedings and a Rule 60 motion is required to clarify anything on that, that can certainly be done. But, you know, the transaction's already occurred, the certificate of title's been issued, and, you know, the Ferraras did everything they possibly could in this case.
What's your answer to Mr. Sato's argument that that certificate, in effect, shouldn't have been issued because the proper documentation wasn't provided to the land court?
We submit that the proper documentation was submitted. That was the deed, that was the findings, that was the order confirming the sale, and all of that was reviewed, and it's more than a ministerial act by the assistant registrar in the torrent system. It's really, you know, the state is essentially certifying title in this case, which they've done.
Mr. Warden, Mr. Sato asserts that the commissioner's deed was not certified. Therefore, it was an improper document upon which the registrar should rely. What is your response to that?
I'm not sure that that's the case. I have no reason to believe that a certified document wasn't submitted to the land court. It's the land court that does strike that. I have no reason to believe that the certified document wasn't presented to the registrar, who properly then issued the certificate. And whether that was an issue or not, still begs the question that the supersedeas bond should have been posted before any of that occurred.
And isn't our law pretty clear that once a certificate of title is issued, unless that party who obtained it was participating in fraud, that certificate of title is conclusive?
Yes. And there absolutely was no fraud in this case. I mean, they came in as interveners to fight for their home and to try to get this thing resolved. And that's why we're before this honorable court.
Your view is also that the bond needed to be posted in any event, even just whether the deed was certified or not, the issue of the posting of the bond is still dispositive. Is that your argument?
Yes, that's the issue on appeal. The bond should have been provided. They move for leave to not file the supersedeas. I was denied, and the bond never occurred, and the case law is clear that once title passes, it's passed, and the case is now moved.
Very well. Anything further?
Nothing else.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Sato, Mr. Werdemann. The court will take this matter under advisement.
Thank you.
provide